Good morning. I hope my voice gets moving here, and apologize for making ugly croaking noises for a little bit. So, let's see. There we go. I'm going to talk about fragmentation and integration in state newborn screening programs and appreciate the opportunity to do so. I have nothing to disclose, but my disclosure slide doesn't seem to be there. Since this is with state programs, I'm not sure what I would disclose, but as I'll be telling you later, I was really kind of surprised to find that our clever healthcare vendors have found a way of monetizing one aspect of newborn screening. I was quite amazed. So this started out being a project for the Assistant Secretary for Planning Evaluation of the Department of Health and Human Services. And that project is the subject of an article that will be coming out in Public Health Reports in January. For that project, I read so many state laws, I was going cross-eyed. I am a lawyer, I'm used to it, being cross-eyed, that is, and had lots of consultations with experts at HRSA and CDC, and spoke with several state program leaders as well. It was an inspiring but somewhat disturbing experience. These people are so dedicated to what they do, and I approach this topic from a perspective of great humility. So the original research question had to do with whether coverage expansion would supplant potentially existing public health program funding needs. And it will not surprise any of you to learn that I concluded that these programs are so underfunded in relation to need that even with coverage expansion, there are still significant gaps to be met. This is part of the ongoing pervasive gap-filling function of public health in relation to the healthcare system, a phenomenon with which, once again, I'm sure we're all quite familiar in maternal child health. So, newborn screening, I assume most of you are familiar with how newborn screening works, but one of the interesting aspects of newborn screening as a quote system, unquote, in other words, a bunch of stuff that relates to other parts of that bunch of stuff somehow. There are lots of moving parts in newborn screening. We think of the state public health lab, or in some states a contract clinical lab, as being central to the metabolic screening piece, which is the grandfather of all the newborn screening. But we also have an agency branch that is responsible for addressing these issues, these conditions, and typically a separate agency branch that is responsible for children and youth with special health care needs. So right away, we've got two different branches in the typical MCH area working to some extent independently of one another. Then we have the vital records branch, which we think of as being information central, but in point of fact often is not well connected with potential information sources. Then we have the birthing facilities. Most of these are obviously hospitals. So in addition to the facilities themselves, we also have the State Hospital Association. Within the birthing facilities, typically there are five discrete steps associated with just collecting the sample from the heel stick, which is what, for those of you who don't deal with this much, that's the typical heel stick there that is on filter paper for the screening. Then we have the community-based clinicians who are caring for the children in their medical, ideally, their medical homes, and for the children who are testing with one of these conditions. We have pediatric subspecialists, endocrinologists in particular, and they are typically at academic health centers. So you can see this is a complicated array of players. And this is just from the top end. The other fascinating piece is the vendors. It never ceases to amaze me how people find ways to make money out of different aspects of the provision of healthcare, and a lot of these vendors are parts of for-profit, sometimes very large, publicly traded corporations. So it's not just the academic health centers, the state agencies, the pediatricians, the state lab. We've got a whole commercial sector that we don't always take adequately into account. So the policy issues I was looking at in this second round of thinking about newborn screening systems. First of all, newborn screening systems, like lots of MCH services, get a lot, I'm going to be harsh here, get a lot of lip service from state policymakers, but sometimes the follow-through and the actual support is lacking. I realize this comes as a terrible shock to all of you, but it's true. Just you'll have to take my word for it at this point, but I'll be happy to provide supporting evidence. These systems are old, and like a lot of old things in state government, they have a tendency to kind of ankylose over time into what we, the typical cliche is we refer to them as silos, right? So we hear about all the different separate entities in state public health. And as I'm hoping to demonstrate, that kind of segregation, fragmentation of systems is not good for babies, okay? Particularly babies at greatest risk. So, do we have to have a crisis? Do we have to have a scandal? Never waste a crisis, okay? One of the great maxims of public policy. And there was a crisis that was reported in the Minneapolis newspaper about 3 years ago about delays in the processing of kits, test kits, that were associated in a couple of cases, at least arguably, with infant deaths, with failure to diagnose in a timely manner. I'll give you an example in just a minute. So you're probably familiar with some of the array of tests that are performed in states. It's not entirely uniform across states, but what you may not know is the Affordable Care Act mandates coverage for these tests without cost sharing. In other words, no deductible, no copay. This is supposed to be first dollar coverage for all the health plans that are governed by the Affordable Care Act. There are still probably 20% of insured people in the U.S. who are in what are called grandfathered plans that are not yet under the auspices of the Affordable Care Act. This is a whole different topic, but it won't be too long before all the grandfathered plans basically come under these ACA mandates, unless something catastrophic happens to the ACA itself. So these are old state programs. A number have been celebrating their 50th anniversary. That's quite remarkable when you think about it. The state programs are somewhat diverse, and the recommendations of the federal panel are adopted. The take-up rate is accelerating, so that states are pretty much getting up to speed with the federal recommendations. There is a lag time. Just because the federal panel recommends something doesn't mean it automatically happens, because new instrumentation has to be purchased, new testing protocols need to be developed, and finally, something like 2 years later, the first billable screening materializes. Some states require adoption of the full federal panel, but it's a small minority. So, moving along. So, typical state agency structure. We have the agency leadership, we have the various support functions, we have the state lab, we have the state MCH branch, and we have the state programs, Title V programs for children with and adolescents with special health care needs. Even this is not uniform across states. Wisconsin, for example, the state lab is not part of the state public health agency. It's separate. So you can see right away, when there's that level of removal, the possibilities, and I assume some of you are quite conversant with state public health agencies, you know, these are not lavishly resourced with regard to information systems. I know in my home state of Kentucky, it is not that long ago that we still had somebody who had to be wheeled out from time to time to fix the COBOL programming. And we had some of those giant pin feed printers, you know, that only print in capital letters. So information interoperability is part of the problem with fragmentation. States are organized differently with regard to their public health systems. And some states have an HHS analog with the health and social services pieces together. Others don't. Some have a freestanding public health agency. Some have a health agency that subsumes public health functions. So lots of different ways to organize state public health. Reporting can be quite inconsistent. Think about this. Your classic state agency is not open for business on weekends and holidays, but babies are born on Friday afternoon or Sunday at 2 a.m., you know. So getting timely turnaround has required state agencies to think about doing business a little differently, and this costs money. Okay, so in Kentucky now, our state lab is open on Saturdays, and if we have a weather emergency, the state lab pathologists are deemed to be essential personnel, so somebody will go out and get them and take them to the lab. That has to do with the fact that our state health commissioner is a pathologist. She gets it. She understands these things. So the process can be slow and prone to errors. The false positive rate is an issue. It's an issue in all sorts of lab tests, but false positives. In this case, you know, you've got the new parents, and they're going to kind of freak out, right? So a false positive is not just a technical matter, but can also require quite a bit of counseling. So an example of the need for timely reporting, two children with very similar circumstances in 2009, because of reporting delay, the child dies. In 2012, because of improvement in reporting and follow-up, arguably the child's life is saved. I say arguably because if you talk to experts in the field, they will tell you that a lot of these deaths, frankly, can't be prevented. But this is why integration of systems and reporting is important, okay? Because if babies fall through the cracks, they could die, and the death rate is definitely elevated. I have spoken already about information systems issues, and the payment issues are not entirely germane. Funding sources, states vary tremendously with regard to funding. This is important because we need to have money for short-term follow-up, for long-term follow-up, for medical formula and food for children with metabolic disorders that require special diets. Insurance companies historically don't pay for food. You know, they say, that's food. That's not healthcare. That's food. So the other issue with the fragmentation of state public health systems is that there is a tendency for this to have a disparate impact on the most vulnerable children, particularly children who are not going home with the birth mother, who are going to foster care, to kinship care, what have you. It can take 6 months to get a Medicaid ID for these kiddos, so it can be really hard. This is kind of a Rube Goldberg chart, and it's not mine. It was done in a national survey, but it gives you some idea of the complexity of the funding system. So this is the grand finale here. How do we integrate? Well, first of all, it would be helpful to have the heel stick reporting and the hearing screening reporting on the same form. Initially, what people did was to glue the forms together, which I just love because it's, you know, it's MCH in a nutshell, right? But now there are forms that are printed so that everything is in a single form. This, the Virginia form, is a bit out of date, but you can see this is just the lab form as opposed to Wisconsin, which has the hearing screening piece as well as the, all the demographics and the lab form. I spoke to a number of very inspiring state leaders of newborn screening programs, and they pointed to all sorts of other complexities in the system that make systems integration so challenging. So everybody supports the need for a uniform reporting system and a uniform protocol. The issue is getting these complex systems to talk to one another. Once again, I cannot say enough about all the people who were so generous with their time and information. This is just my somewhat cynical interpretation of some of these findings, and we'll have questions at the end. So I think that's it.